Alrighty, folks, it is 2 p.m. and I think we're at a quorum, so we're going to go ahead and get started with the June 18th Core MPO Technical Coordinating Committee. Up first, we've got approval of today's agenda.
So moved, Michelle Strickland, City of Savannah.
Second, Holm, Effingham.
Awesome. Can we start the vote to the right? We're approving the agenda. Can you start the vote?
Proctor, yes.
Teague, yes.
Means, yes. Clark, yes.
Moskowitz, yes.
Holm, yes.
Strickland, yes.
Gunnigan, yes.
Brooks, yes. All righty. Approval of the April 17th meeting minutes.
Move to approve Moskowitz.
Second, Clark.
All right, we'll start to the left.
Dunnigan, yes.
Strickland, yes.
Holm, yes.
Moskowitz, yes.
Clark, yes.
Means, yes.
Teague, yes.
Proctor, yes.
Brooks, yes. All right, and our up first, we're going to have TIP amendments.
Good afternoon. I will be giving the report on the TIP amendments. So the state fiscal year of 2025 ends on June 30th, 2025. And at the end of the fiscal year, Core MPO assesses the status of each project and their project phases, particularly those with funds programmed in fiscal year 2025. So Core MPO staff is coordinated with project managers slash sponsors on the project's development status to understand where these projects are at and what updates need to be made to the TIP. So additionally, during the public comment period, it was requested to move the Chatham Area Transit TIP Amendment request to August 2025 due to board changes at CAT. Additionally, GDOT provided some further input for future fiscal years and costs for proposed projects. And then GDOT also requested an administrative modification to a project that we included in this report as well. So I will get into the details of that report. But first, I will talk about the public participation process. So we're currently in the public comment period and review period for these TIP amendments. It started on June 11th and it will end on June 25th. And there will be a public hearing on June 25th with the Core MPO board. So far, we have not received comments from the public. However, we have received comments from GDOT and the Core MPO board chairman. And so we made updates to this report based on their comments, and I'll get into those. Moving to the proposed amendments. So these are all of the amendment requests that we received. And again, we received some comments from GDOT and the board chairman. And so we made updates to the report accordingly. Starting with CAT, CAT requested several TIP amendments for the following projects under operating assistance, preventative maintenance, and including the addition of new projects such as the Farebox replacement project and the Plant Riverside project. But again, we received a comment from the Core MPO board chairman to move these proposed amendments to the August 2025 meetings just because of the board changes at Chatham Area Transit. So for the following projects, for Project Durin, SR26, SR404, and Stillwell, we received some comments from GDOT on those projects. So currently, GDOT will provide more information on these projects, and we included them in this TIP report because we're anticipating for there to be updates to either the project schedule or the cost estimates. We just don't have that information yet. But GDOT will be giving us that information at some point in the future. We just don't have the details. We just want to be proactive and include it in a report for when we do receive those details. And then for the administrative modifications, the SR21 widening project will be added to the illustrative section of the TIP. And then the I-95 FM Florida project will have updated funding amounts for Y-001 in the construction phase of fiscal year 2026. I know Y-240 is here, but that's actually incorrect. And so I'll make sure to update the report and remove that from here. So this is the following report, but again, these changes are being moved to August 2025. So I will probably get into more detail at a future meeting, but because they are proposed amendments that are not happening now and are being moved to August, I will just show what we've done for the report, but then also we made a note that these are being moved. These will be processed at a later time and in the August round of meetings. And then the same goes, or similar goes for the following projects, such as the Project Durin and SR-26/US-80 at Bull River, SR-404, Stillwell Road. These projects, we're still waiting on information from the Georgia Department of Transportation to know exactly what those changes will be. And then I also wanted to move back up to the Savannah I-16 ramp removal project. City of Savannah also requested amendments to this project, but we need to coordinate with FHWA just because FHWA directly manages the grant associated with these projects. So we need more information on how to format that tip, amendment as well. So moving on to the updated project pages. So this is how they will look when we officially do the TIP amendment in August for Chatham Area Transit. So this is what those updates will be in the future. And then for Project Durin and the Reconnecting Community and Neighborhoods Grant Program project, which is the I-16 ramp removal, the Bull River project, we just kept it a little bit more vague in terms of what the updates will be. We just know that there will likely be updates, so we just wanted to include them in the report. We just don't have exact numbers and dates yet, but we still included that information in the report. And then this is the new project that we're adding to the illustrative section of the TIP. And then this is also the administrative modification that was requested by Georgia Department of Transportation. And here are the changes here. And I'll show the original project page as well. So originally for the Y-001 funds, there was in fiscal year 2026, $2.6 million in federal funds and $654,000 in state funds in fiscal year 2026 for the construction phase. And that's since been changed to $5 million in Y-001 funds and then $1.2 million in state funds in fiscal year 2026 for the construction phase. And then the rest of this is just the other materials we made for this, notice to the public, the MTP and TIP consistency check, and all of these projects are consistent with the MTP. And then again, the included note that a lot this report is subject to change and some of the amendments are going to be pushed to August. And this is the overall table we did of the project status check. So what we did was we went through every project in a TIP and looked up where they were in terms of funding by fiscal year by phase to see which projects don't need any action because their fiscal years or project phases or any other associated information is up to date and accurate. But for some of the projects, we want to make sure that they're accurate. And so we need to coordinate with GDOT to know the specifics of what changes need to be made by fiscal year, by project phase, by funding numbers or funding amounts. We're still waiting on that information, but we denoted it all here about the possible next steps for all of these projects. And then this is just a coordination with GDOT, Chatham Area Transit, and City of Savannah to make these changes to the TIP. And that's the end of this report. Again, it might change based on when GDOT gives us updated information and FHWA gives us updated information. And then a lot of this information is going to be presented again at the August 2025 meetings. Are there any questions?
I have one.
Yes.
What is the project, the illustrative section? What is that?
Yes, so let me scroll up because it explains it in the project page what the illustrative section is. A little further up. Okay, so it's a project that will have significant impact on the Savannah region, but it's not in our TIP. But it's just there for information purposes.
Got you.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. Anybody else? All right. Can we endorse the TIP amendments as they're currently presented?
Same move, Strickland.
Second, Clark.
All right, let's start it to the right. Thanks.
Brock Trias.
Teague, yes.
Mains, yes. Clark, yes.
Moskowitz, yes.
Holm, yes.
Strickland, yes.
Dunnigan, yes.
Bird, yes.
Brooks, yes. All right, thank you for that. Mm-hmm. Up next, we have the ETIP request for proposals.
We have been doing research about an interactive TIP or ETIP on what they can do for us. So we have several demonstrations from vendors and also from the users, and we compile the notes. Sadie will give you a comparison notes on those, and then I will present the RFP, particularly the scope of services, and then we will probably ask for your conditional endorsement. Okay.
This is Sadie Ashlerant with Quorum PO. So like Wycota mentioned, we were able to do a couple of demonstrations with MPOs and organizations that have used different ETIP softwares. So for Eco Interactive, which is one of the softwares, we got a demonstration by ARC. And then for Workflow Manager, we got a demonstration by Winston-Salem Area TPO. And so this is just a comprehensive document of all the notes, comparing and contrasting the two softwares for features that, like, we're interested in. So notably, in regards to, like, things like tip management, ARC said they ran into a lot of difficulties with these functions because a lot of bugs. Whereas for Workflow Manager, Winston-Salem Area TPO said that it was generally pretty user-friendly. Additionally, another thing that we wanted to note was the cost comparison. So for Workflow Manager, it would be about $95,000 for a 5-year cost, and then for Eco Interactive would be over $150,000. Additionally, Workflow Manager is a bit of a newer software. They haven't been working with many MPOs, whereas Eco Interactive has been around for quite a while. And additionally, in terms of GIS compatibility, we learned that ARC had a lot of difficulties with Eco Interactive, where they had a lot of trouble with, like, for example, like zooming in, zooming out on the public interface and a lot of other general features that didn't seem to exist, as well as like compatibility with getting the data. And then in terms of Workflow Manager, they said it was generally okay. A lot of the software existed for that to be compatible, but it just needed to be continued to work on. So yeah, I'll leave it to Wycota.
Okay, I just want to mention there are not that many ETIP providers or vendors on the market. So previously we used the DTS. I think GDOT might know, county might know, we used to use the DTS to provide that service online. We have an interactive TIP. So we know DTS is one of the companies that can do it, and the Eco Interactive is another one, and the Workflow Manager is another one. I think ARC also mentioned us in Highland. So we also coordinated with our SAGES department to see whether they can develop something that, like internally, and then they told us they probably don't have that capabilities. Some larger MPOs, they actually have a staff like Denver MPO. They actually developed it on internally. And ARC had their own, but it didn't work out, so that's why they went through. But I think when we advertise for our RFP, we probably will target these this company as well, but we will also advertise through the Georgia Procurement Registry. So proper solicitate from IT companies or GIS companies. So I just want to mention that. And one advice that we get from both, actually, from both ARC, both users, is like, your RFP should be as specific as possible. For example, when ARC had the service with Eco Interactive, remember our tip which shows the phases and you have the years in the column. Actually, it's just the opposite. So you have a PE on the column and then the year. So it's just a quite opposite. And then also they didn't like sort by PE right away, utility construction. So we didn't thought that would be a problem, but they all told us, and actually both users told us, you need to be very, very specific about like what format you want the products to be. And also, if you have the map feature, zoom in, zoom out, you need to spell that out. Like zoom in, zoom out. Yeah. Cause we assume that's standard, right? But they said, no, you have to spell that out because some of them are just not very compatible. So that's what we were trying to be. The Salem area MPO, their RFP is about like 8 pages and the scope is like 2 pages. So it's very, very general. And ARCs is more detailed, but they don't have call for projects. But for us, we decided, okay, we want to be as specific as possible. For example, we would say like for the call for projects, we're going to do Y230 funds, transportation alternative funds, and carbon reduction programs. So we will spell out like we have like 3 different call for projects. So you need to like develop the software for that. And also who will manage that. So it's the more detailed information we have, the easier it is to deploy. So we don't have to like go through all of those. So what we really want to accomplish through this is to have a streamlined process. First, the task would be for the call for projects because we are going to start call for projects this fall, either in August or September, depends on how soon we can deploy this. But we want to do the call for projects process and to ask this vendor to help us to do that. And then we also want to have, because probably in the spring, we're going to develop a new tip. So we want them to have the capability, probably we'll create a database and the staff can enter all this information or when we get the information from GDOT or something. So we can update that and then they should be able to convert that into the format we want and export it out so that we can insert into a Word document. So that's for the tip development. And after that, we probably want to track what is the like funding milestones. Are these funds authorized? Are they making progress? Are this project is being delayed? What is reason of delay? So that will be covered under tip management. And also another, okay, this is the format. I really want them to, I want our tip to have this format to look like. And also after that, we also have a tip amendments. So tip amendments, administrative modifications, we do have the STIP tip amendment process. So that will be put into that. So every time you submit like GDOT or Chatham County or City of Savannah, you submit a request, you can enter that information, through this database. And then the MPO staff can go and check the status. Okay. We received a request and the MPO reviews the information and see approve or not and then move on to the next stage. And then after the like TCC endorsement, CompuBoard board adoption, and then staff will finalize all those updates and we can generate an updated report. So that is for the tip amendments. And also staff should have the capability just to go into the database, like logging as administrator. We can search the project by GDOT number or GPI number or by map or click on the map or by query. So we can search by the project sponsor, say Chatham County or something. So the project will pop up so that we can update the information. And then we also want to have a public interface. So for example, the chairman wants to just go check one project. He wouldn't have like administrative privilege, user. So he can just go to the ETIP website, and click on the map, or just search by project type, or search by project funding, or search by project sponsor, and then bring up that project information. He can review the information and print out the report. So basically, those are what we want. And we also have another one that I think I probably will have this added in as a MTP consistency check, because I think probably we will upload all of our MTP projects because we don't have that many. So every time we do tip amendments or something, we can have a check whether it's consistent. So that will help us. One of those company workflow manager actually have a function to do study tracking, but we depends on how much money we have. So we might have this or might not have this. So basically, these are the features that we want. We would like to get input from the TCC. So this is the first time that we present to you. So after this meeting, you can review the scope and let us know what works or what's not working. We were hoping to have your conditional endorsement of this so that we can present to the MP board, because we do want to release the RFP. So we hope that have probably 1 month to go through the RFP process. And then after we secure a vendor, it takes about 1 month to 2 months to at least deploy the call for projects. So that's the schedule that I have for call for project 2 months. For tip development, I hope to have that done by April the 30th. And then others like tip management and admin, administrative modification or amendments probably deployed by June the 30th. So take a look at this. And I have talked about the eTip during the UPWP development, as you may remember. So we actually put some money in the admin because we have like equipment supplies in admin, or we also bumped the tip development because we know tip development will be a major task for next fiscal year. So we actually have $100,000 over there. So my estimated budget is I think I can go probably a little bit higher than this, probably $40,000 or something. Because I mean, by the end of the year, we do reimbursement to GDOT. We cannot obligate all of our regular PL funds. So I think we should have enough budget to do this. But since we got like three different calls for projects, so it might cost a little bit more. So I can probably just go above $39,000. And as I mentioned, we want to be as specific as possible to help the deployment. So what I did, and besides the RFP, I also did a user permission. So I'll just outline some of this. For the call for projects, you will have like three different project managers. So I will manage the Y230 funds, and Asia will manage Y301 funds, and Anna will manage the Y60 funds. So what we will do for the user permission, so we will review the submitted projects. See you, all of you will submit projects. We will review that and check the completeness and check consistency with 2050 MTP. And then if you have some information missing, we will coordinate with you so that we can make sure. And then if we need to like make some minor edits, and we can make edits, all of that. And when the completeness check it's done, and then we notify the review committee on set. You can go ahead and then score on the projects. And then we will also be doing the, ideally, the software itself, we will do tabulate the results, actually scores and find the rankings. So we will have the probably admin permission for these. But for the project sponsors, you will probably submit an application. So you probably create an application and also, I mean, you might just create it today, but not finish it, but you can come back later and submit, make edits, and you can submit the information and upload the supporting documents like local match commitment letter or something like that. And if we coordinate with you, and then you will have the capability to submit additional information. So we have to tell the like vendors who will have this user privilege or who has this authorization. So what I have over here, I am assuming that each agency, because most likely the applicants will be all of you. So agency that like for example, Bike Walks Van, they might have a project, but they don't have the local match. So they have to work with one of those, like municipalities. So I assume each municipality will have one designated person. So I listed all the TCC members over here. So if you have a project and you will be like Diana, I mean, all of you sitting over here will have the capability to submit applications over here. So I list your name over here, but if you have a different staff member to work with, I know Chatham County might have a Tina Barcold to work on certain projects, but we only want one designated person to submit the project into this portal. And then also for review committee, I don't know right now who will be on the review committee. So I just put some like a possible names. I know for Y230 because I'm the project manager. So I will be have a capability to review and score the projects. Probably TCC chairperson and GDOT definitely. So I just like a CAD probably will submit applications as well. So that's why I listed some of those. But if you want to serve on this committee, we will just give you the privilege to log in and review the project. But if you don't have time to do it, we will just don't give you that permission. So that's the way. And also for each funding source, we will have like different, because for the Y301, we think probably BICAD committee, and TPAC might have a people dedicated person because those are just the BICAD projects. Why is there the carbon reduction? I don't know right now. I don't know, but we will work on the, keep on work on this list. But for TIP development, I think mostly it will be restricted to Asia and me because we will be the ones to make the edits in the database and then generate the report. GDOT probably, I know GDOT and the local project sponsors will probably provide project information, additional information, but I think we can probably don't have to go through this ETIP process, probably just going through like email or something. So, but right now I'm just listing over here just to list them out as possibilities. For TIP management, that is definitely the Quorum PO staff because we have to track. So I put it in Asia and myself. And TIP administrative modification, this is where you can submit information directly to the report. So you will have the user privileges over here. For example, Kenise will submit information about GDOT projects, and Deanna might submit information on Chatham County projects, and Mary will submit projects on CAD projects. So we will finalize these, but this is just to let you know what kind of it, because every different user has a different privilege, the logging information. And for the public interface, public probably don't have any administrative privilege to access to the database, so they will only have the public access, a public interface. So basically, this is the eTIPS, and this is the first time you see very, very detailed information or detailed scope. So we do hope that you can just review the scope review the scope to see whether it reflects our needs. Let us know what it will work. And if you have any comments, try to send that comments before the end of next Tuesday, before the Quorum PO board meeting, basically. And then if we do need to like sit down, have a special TCC meeting just to go over this, just let us know.
Any questions? Just so I understand the scope. So this is for a one-time development of the ETIP, or are you looking to?
This is for this one-time development.
Okay.
Normally what happens is the one time you develop the ETIP, and then in the later years, you just have maintenance, you pay the maintenance fees. That's why when Sadie presented this information comparison, so you can see the price. So this is basically the year one. This is the year one implementation. And then for year two, you will have like license, maintenance, and support. That would come from the regular or formula PL funds. Normally they would be around like $12,000 or something. So this is the first year. This is the first year deployment.
So I just kind of a general comment to think about then. I know you said you want to be very specific, and I understand that, but
these funding sources are from the bill, which is going to end in 2026. And so do we want to call out very specific programming when that programming may be different under a new authorization bill? But just think about that.
Yes. We did coordinate it with GDOT. So because we are going to do the call for projects, so I did ask GDOT, say, because we know in 2026, those funds, SDP funds probably will not go away. Vital 30 funds probably will not go away. Carbon reduction program funds might be going away. But so far, GDOT hasn't heard anything about those funds, like totally eliminated. So yes.
It's something to think about.
Yes, we are aware of that.
I have two comments. I don't know if it's possible, and I don't know if there's a reason to not do it, but on the tip sheet, since we're going through this new process, is it possible to put the date of the amendment, like as a footnote or something?
That's part of the scope that we want to, I think we did add in that we want to have like historical record. Yeah. Because for example, your Girard Avenue project, we do administrative modification on May 1st and then May 15th, there was another administrative modification. Yes. We actually did add that in the scope. But please go back and review the scope. Let us know what additional information needs to be there because the best that we can spell it out, the easier for the deployment. So that they don't encounter problems, difficulties.
Okay.
Yes, historic record is definitely, something that we really want.
Awesome. That was it. They were both related to that. So awesome. Thanks.
Yeah. If for some reason, it doesn't deploy in time, we would still have to do it like manually. That's another, item five, you will see call for projects. We did develop the menu. That's, if we have this menu finalized, we have the criteria finalized, it might be easier to put it in the ETIP. Otherwise we have to like wait. So, but if for some reason it doesn't work out, we still have this, we just go through the regular way. So we just a lot of emails, a lot of checking, a lot of back and forth.
All right. Can we get a motion to endorse the ETIP request for proposals, conditionally?
Motion, Moskowitz.
Second, Strickland.
Okay. Sorry, to the right.
Octreus.
Teague, yes.
Means, yes.
Clark, yes.
Moskowitz, yes.
Holm, yes.
Strickland, yes.
Dunnigan, yes.
Bird, yes.
Brooks, yes.
Thank you.
All right, we will move into status reports. 2050 MTP executive summary.
Okay. At the last meeting, Anna presented to you about the visual executive summary that CORMPO developed because I still have to finalize 25th MTP, which probably is more than 200 pages. But the visual executive summary is about 60 pages. Between last meeting and then end of May, we were able to contact a company to help us to translate the visual executive summary into the required limited English proficiency or LEP languages. One of them is Chinese, one of them is Spanish, another one is Vietnamese. But considering we have the Hyundai plant coming and we know a lot of Korean population will move in, so we expect the Korean population probably will reach the threshold for the LEP. So we went ahead and translated it into the Korean as well. Hopefully you are all multilingual, so you can help us to review whether this is accurate, because I can review the Chinese version. I mean, for the previous survey, I actually translated the Chinese version. So, but this is the Chinese version, so I can read through it and then to see what it works. But we do, hope that somebody else can help us to verify the information, the translation in Korean, Spanish. Probably Spanish might be easier over here because a lot more people speak Spanish over here. So help us to read through it. So just to make sure, but we try to be proactive. So just want to tell you that they're available. If we do, like Hyundai do want to do some transportation investments, they can visit our website and so they can understand it. So I just want to let you know that we do have the translated version available.
Awesome. Thank you. Seeing no questions, we'll go on to the call for projects.
Okay. As I mentioned, we are going to do call for project this fall. Because that's the first thing that we need to do for any TIP development. So we do need to have a project prioritization. Remember when we developed the UPWP, we did insert a TIP development schedule. So according to that schedule, we are going to do the call for projects between August and December. And then we are going to adopt the TIP prioritization or priority list and the ranking and the funding allocation probably in February. So potentially, we still have some, if we don't have this ETIP helping us, deployed by, I would say probably by the latest would be February, that we can still have that information. So hopefully, that will work out. So, like I mentioned, I have contacted GDOT. Say we assume that we're going to still have like three different calls for projects because as of fiscal year 2026, all three funding sources are still available. But after that, we are not certain, but at least for this, we are planning to do three. So as you can see, staff have developed the menu and we assume that we have used the same format for the form. That will also be helpful to do like a ETIP deployment, so we've just submit the standard form. And so we hope to have, we actually integrate the ETIP over here. So basically we think that we can probably, this is the first time we present to you the criteria on the potential funding revenues and how much of that. And we review this probably in July, we will schedule a special meeting, probably for TCC, we just go over the SDBG, the criteria, for BPAC, probably go over the TA criteria to make sure. And then we hope that, this is a status report for you now, but in August, we hope to finalize those. So you will endorse or Columbia Board will approve those criteria. And then by that time, hopefully we will have a vendor available and then we can incorporate all of those criteria into the ETIP. And then we will announce the call for projects and we will, like previously, we will still have a like pre-application workshop with you. Basically holding your hands to show you how to do it. Because previously Chatham County is the only project sponsor that lays out their projects if they need PE funds in 2025, probably in 2 years, you want to lay out right of way. And in another 2 years, you probably want to lay out construction. So everybody else didn't get it yet. But we will hold your hands to make sure you understand how to do it and lay out your schedule and then also lay out your cost estimates. So if you have a preliminary engineering, $1 million, based on the CVR, the price will increase. So you might want to request more than you need. So even if you have a cost estimate of 1 million, you might want to like request 1.3 million or something just to have yourself covered. So by the time we have the real revenue from GDOT and then we can decide how much we gave you. But the rule of thumb for you is to always ask more. Because if you ask for $1 million, we give you $1 million, and then you find out it costs 1.5, you come back to us and say we need half a million, we probably, by that time, all the funds will be balanced. So we probably will not be able to give you that. So always ask for more. So that's my two rule of thumb. So one thing, make sure you lay out your schedule. Two thing, ask for more money. Another thing that I didn't mention, actually, I think that I was glad I was talking to Richard before the meeting. One of the requirements for any projects that you submit is to make sure they're consistent with the 2050 MTP. So if your project is not consistent with 2050 MTP now, make sure work with us to get that amended into the 2050 MTP. or if it's a bike path project, make sure to coordinate Asia to amend it into the non-motorized transportation plan. Like Effingham County, you just complete the transportation master plan. You might have a lot of like smaller projects. I mean, bigger projects already covered, like CR21 widening. But if you have like intersection improvements, roundabout or something, that might be consistent with the operational improvement set aside. But if it's a specific project, it's like capacity project, it's not included, coordinate with us. So to make sure that you reach out to us, so that we can get the MTP amendments or non-motorized transportation improvement plan amended before you submit the application, because that is the most important criteria before you submit a call for projects, the consistency check. So this is basically a very, 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 very vigorous schedule. We might not make it to this schedule, but this is, our best scenario. So all of the information actually for each call for projects actually included. For the Y230 call for projects, we updated these are just assumed funding because I do have a calculation like how much will be available for the 2027 based on the current TIP and the whatever information we got from GDOT. For future years, we just assume $4 million, but GDOT will provide more specific revenues for these. And then also, the criteria, over here, the criteria is based on the 2050 MTP because, the previous ranking criteria based on 2045, but 2050 MTP, remember we have three tiers, prioritization, needs assessment, resiliency assessment, and equity assessment. So we actually, made a little bit of adjustment over here, but still it follows the three tier. So we will go over through this probably in July in more detail, but you can just go back and check whether these make any sense. And then for the carbon reduction program, so fortunately, GDOT actually has a carbon reduction program already established. So we just followed the GDOT footstep for those. So as you can see, the criteria over here is basically based on the GDOT based on the GDOT carbon reduction program criteria. And then for the transportation alternatives program, currently what we are proposing to use is to use the 2050 MTP. It's a Word document. Okay. Sorry, I thought it's a PDF file, but basically this one is based on the 2050 MTP, the equity score, and then non-motorized transportation plan for bicycle and pedestrian projects. So these are the information for your consideration, but now go back and check which projects you already have. I would say if you have one project, try one project out with all these criteria to see how it scores. If it doesn't score well, yeah, you might have some comment, right? So just try to do that. And then also make sure check the 2050 MTP consistency. If it's not consistent, coordinate with us so that we can get the projects amended. Any questions?
I have two. What existing projects receive CRP funds, just to give us an idea of what projects might qualify?
Normally the bike path projects are eligible. Also, if you want to I think Anna might have more information on this. I think LED lights replacement.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, Anna McCory. If you look at GDOT's carbon reduction strategy, they actually outline, I think, over 40 different project types and examples in that carbon reduction strategy. So it ranges from things with freight, with bike, flooding reduction, solar in the right of way. Like it can cover quite a few different things. So it is linked in that manual, or you could just Google GDOT carbon reduction strategy and look at that manual, because the manual here is the ranking is almost exactly like they have it in the manual. There are a few minor changes that you might see dealing with language. But otherwise, take a look at that.
Awesome. Thank you. And then my other question is about lab certification. Is that needed by
yes.
the time you get authorization or?
I think probably for preliminary engineering, yeah, actually we do. I think by the time you're ready to spend the money, you should be lab certified. Okay. Yeah, but if you, during your application, you're not, but you're in the process of getting lab certified, that should be fine. But by the time you are ready to spend the money, you should be lab certified. Another thing I do want to mention is FHWA has removed a lot of the links. For example, SDBG, you know, and the IIJA, they have guidelines. And for the transportation alternatives, they should have guidelines. Those have been removed. So right now we really don't know what happened. But we still assume that the previous eligibility and criteria still apply. Just want to mention that.
Thank you.
Okay.
Up next, US 80 corridor study phase two.
Okay, I'm very glad to report that we kicked off the US 80 corridor study on May the 13th, and we already had our first coordination meeting. And then I coordinated with the consultant yesterday. They were saying, they were telling me the project management plan and public outreach plan will be sent this week, probably by the end of this week, will be sent to us. So that's our first deliverable, because right now, Their previous task, one of the tasks was to do data collection, traffic counts collection, but now school is off. So they're not going to do data collection until the school is back. So that probably will be in August. But now they're working on the project management plan, public outreach plan. And then, probably we'll work on task 2.8 first. That's the cost estimating for phase one projects.
Sounds good. Urban flood model phase two.
Hey everyone, Anna Broadmerkel-McCoy, Core MPO's staff. So the urban flood model phase two study did procure the University of Georgia and Goodwin Mills Kaywood as a subconsultant to complete the study. So that contract was executed by the MPC on June 3rd. So right now we are waiting to have our kickoff meeting. GMC and UGA are working on scheduling that, and so we've been in contact. So kickoff meeting coming soon. So thanks for everyone, everyone's help getting through this process.
Thanks so much. The bike and pedestrian facility update.
Okay. So the bicycle and pedestrian facility study, which is a study that will inventory and assess all of the bike lanes, sidewalks, and crosswalks throughout the Core MPO region, has officially kicked off. And the consulting firm that will be handling this project is Croy Engineering. So we did have our official kickoff meeting yesterday with Croy Engineering. So based on that meeting, I would be on the lookout for a request to submit data to Croy, because part of this project is including a literature review where they compile all of the map data of the map sidewalks, crosswalks, any bike and pedestrian related infrastructure we have. If there are any files that your organization have that can help them compile all of that together, that would be very helpful for this process. So be on the lookout for a request for data, and specifically map data associated with bicycle and pedestrian infrastructure. So the project is expected to be completed March 31st, 2027, but we're still at the very beginning of the project, so there's still a lot of opportunity to get involved, submit data, or submit any advice to the prime consultant, which is Croy Engineering, just to make sure that they have everything they need to get this study done. So that is the end of this update.
Thank you, Asia. Up next is the non-motorized transportation plan status update.
I will also be giving that report as well.
So the non-motorized transportation plan is on hold in terms of adoption, so we will not be adopting it this month, even though we really would have wanted to. But in terms of updates for the project, we will be working with SAGES on evaluating those projects using GIS. And I actually met with a member of SAGES yesterday just to figure out how do we start doing that. And this will be really helpful using GIS to assess the projects, because instead of having to do it by hand, one by one by one by one, we could have the aid of technology, which will be great. But again, it won't be adopted this June. And I don't have a specific date on when it will be adopted, but hopefully it will be soon. Are there any questions or comments?
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Federal Land Access Program call for projects.
Hey everyone, Anna Brown-Merkel-McCoy again. All right, so we've been talking about the Federal Land Access Program, or FLAP, for a couple of meetings now. The call for projects for Georgia is officially open as of May 30th, and it is running through August 29th. And so, again, this is for projects that provide access to federal lands. These federal lands need to be publicly accessible. We do have more information here for the Georgia FLAP homepage. And then we do have the USDOT FHWA Eastern Federal Lands Highway Division contact information here. Please contact this person to see if you have a project that qualifies. I'm your core MPO contact, but again, contacting the person who works for the program is probably going to give you the best information, and I can be part of those conversations if needed. We do have large pieces of federal land in our planning area. However, we think Fort Pulaski is probably the best opportunity here. Projects can be within 10 miles of the federal land, so that covers most of the county. If not all of it. So please, please, please apply. We have heard from other Georgia MPOs that this is easy money, and it is 100% federal, so you don't have to provide a match. So those call for projects are going to end at the end of August. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Anna. The land use reporting template.
Great. So we have mentioned this in our past meeting. Core MPO staff is going to request that all MPO members submit a land use report each month to track the projects that are upcoming and ongoing to determine impacts to our transportation network. This will allow staff to review multi-jurisdictional projects and plan for changes in density, land use, and zoning throughout our planning area. There is a template attached to this agenda in Excel format. And it will be sent out via email to all MPO members after this meeting. And so please direct this to the correct person. You know, you as maybe a transportation engineer may not be the best person to report this, or maybe you don't work for an organization that does anything with land use or development. So you wouldn't be required to submit it then. But please direct it to the correct person. We would ask that you submit the report by the 5th of each month to Kieran Caulfield, our administrative assistant. And here we do have what we're asking for outlined. So in the Excel sheet, there's a data reporting form. There's a description of what each thing is here, which I've copied. And then there's an options tab, because there are a few drop-down menus. But ideally, this is letting us know what's going on, letting us know what's coming, and we can prepare for it.
Mm-hmm. So Chatham County and Savannah Developments come through the MPC. Have they done a version of this already? Can they submit?
So this is a little tricky, and because we do site plan review, but the MPC also gets things if they need to be rezoned or the land use map needs to be updated. So if something doesn't need to be rezoned, it doesn't always come to like the MPC board, or it doesn't need a site plan variance. With the site plan review, we do have a similar template we are working on as well to double check this. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
So we are trying to have
generating a report also, since things come there first, and then.
So we are going to be working on generating a report. Okay. Yes. But we are going to ask just to make sure everything comes through that Chatham County and City of Savannah have the correct person fill these out, whether it's the building and safety regulations, and then probably, you know, John, and that's with the City of Savannah, the Urban Planning Department.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And if you have questions or suggestions on how to update this, we can change it. Hopefully, it is pretty straightforward.
I just have one thought. I noticed there isn't like a geolocator on there. You're not asking for like the address, or you say the road that's impacted, but, you know, probably want to put something so you can find it in spatially.
Great. Thanks.
All right. Core Connections newsletter.
Right, so hopefully you've seen this in your inbox, but we are excited to present Core Connections, a monthly newsletter to brief you on the changing federal landscape and other essential transportation planning information. We've tried to add everybody's email that we have for the MPO, and so we invite you and encourage all members to please add the sign up for this newsletter and direct link to our Core MPO website homepage on your own respective web pages. If you have a highlight you'd like to share, we do a highlight of the month, you can send that to me, and we'd love to put that front and center. And you can also see the previous newsletters here. So if you've missed them, you'd like to see an example, you can click through and see what we've got. It's just information, especially with, you know, all these changes in the federal landscape. We want to keep you all aware of the situation as we learn information. And then it's also going to include resources. We have the orientation here, and then funding opportunities as well that are coming up.
The Coastal Georgia Aquatic Barriers.
So we have a special guest for you all, a presentation today. I've been working with the Georgia Department of Natural Resources, Coastal Resource Division, in learning more about the data sets that they're creating and thinking about how can we use the data that they're collecting in our own work. So I'll invite Janie Gaskin up here to give that presentation this afternoon. Awesome. Thank you, Anna. Hi, my name is Janie Gaskin, and I'm a wetlands biologist with the Georgia Coastal Management Program, which is within the Coastal Resources Division of Georgia Department of Natural Resources. And I'm currently the lead biologist on the Coastal Aquatic Barrier Assessment. So this got kicked off when county officials in McIntosh County, Georgia, approached us for technical assistance to partner on writing a restoration grant to repair a culvert that was failing, and also a choke point culvert that resulted in a lot of flooding of a road that was key in their community. So this is an undersized box culvert that is pinching off about 80 miles of upstream network in the Altamaha River watershed, which is ecologically important for us, but also important for the community as well. So although we were not successful in our grant applications, the feedback that we got was there's probably lots of choke point culverts on the coast. Why is this one your priority? Which led us to partner with the Southeast Aquatic Resources Partnership on a project actually inventorying all coastal barriers. So anywhere where there's a road crossing a tidal creek or stream, or a non-tidal creek or stream in any of our 11 county service area, we are measuring this, recording geolocating information on it, and then ranking it so that we can develop a coastwide list of priority barriers that are impacting our habitats and our community. We originally leveraged funds from NFWF and then also some BIL funds. So, and now we have a technician team that reports to me of two technicians that are funded through the Coastal Zone Management Act. So we are, again, Coastal Resources Division of DNR, sponsored the Aquatic Connectivity Assessment Team, and our goal is to survey all the barriers. We estimate that there's between 2,000 and 4,000 total barriers and the coast, and I'll show you some of our data in a minute for what we think that we have what we have assessed so far. So our goal, again, is to prioritize these for restoration and then work with communities to identify funding sources to remediate these culverts. So install larger structures, more structures, you know, again, enable the wetlands to be able to hold water during storm surge events, and allow the marshes and coastal wetlands to be healthy enough where they can still act as a buffer for our communities during environmental changes. So again, this is our assessment team. So I have a co-lead biologist, Megan Angelina. We have a team of between 2 to 3 technicians and sometimes a college intern that's going out and doing actual physical assessments. So this is a statistical survey that was designed by SARP and their partners. So every single barrier is assessed the same way. They came down and trained my co-biologist and I, and then we did a kind of a train the trainer where then we train the technicians as they come on, and then work side by side with them as they're learning the evaluation techniques. So these are physical measurements of the barrier. We're also looking at the ratio of the size of the opening of the barrier to things like bank size and scour pool size, things like that. So to date, we have, and this started, we started our survey in May of 2023, so a little over 2 years, and we have assessed over 1,500 barriers so far. So we performed the actual statistical measurements on over 500. The reason we aren't able to statistically assess all barriers, sometimes if it's a bridge, we're going to say this is an adequate for flow, adequate, it's not going to be causing flooding issues. We also avoid things that are on private property, so that is why that number is lower there. And we, out of our ranking, we have found that 72 of those were ranked to have severe constriction, 61 moderate, 55 minor, and we, again, think we have somewhere between 2,000 and 4,000 barriers left, and we have funding to continue these assessments for the next several years. And again, our goal is to assess every barrier in all 11 coastal counties. Thinking about Chatham County with the MPO, this is just a snapshot of data that we have so far. Again, all of these, we collect our physical measurements. We're also collecting the coordinates of each barrier. So we can analyze them in ArcGIS and develop these maps to look at where priority sites are. So our goal is to develop coastwide priority, but then also work with local governments and community officials to develop priorities within specific communities, whether that be county level or MPC level or even town level, or in the case of Tybee Island, we're working directly with the city officials there too. So again, where we're hoping to go with this is to work with our partners at GDOT, Georgia Power, local governments, community planning organizations. We've also partnered with several academic and researchers who study hydrology so that we can, when we do restoration, so that we can be very well informed and have some research, science-based approaches to remediate these barriers. We've partnered with NGOs like the Nature Conservancy to justify land purchases for conservation, to open up more habitat and streams and reduce flooding. And then we've also become part of several region-wide initiatives, such as the South Atlantic Salt Marsh Initiative, or SASME, and are part of multiple restoration work groups as well. So just to give you an idea of restoration benefits, flood abatement, obviously removing a barrier or installing something larger will increase flow and reduce flooding in populated areas, improve the stream ability to move excess water out of concrete areas and cities and communities back into the wetlands that, you know, their ecological function really is to hold this water. Obviously, infrastructure improvements will help community sustainability, especially when we're looking at evacuation routes for storm events, helping with disaster preparedness. And then, obviously, all of the ecological benefits for, you know, keeping water in the wetlands, restoring connectivity, providing habitat,
and increasing habitat diversity, supporting wildlife populations like species of fish that spend their larval stages in some of the smaller rivers and creeks and then migrate to the ocean for their adult life cycle. And also, you know, enhancing critical services again for the wetlands to serve as a buffer for us during storm surge and extreme weather events. So here's some examples, and example information that we pull. So this is, I believe in Chatham County, Augusta Road, Highway 21 in Port Wentworth. So when we're looking at these things, we're doing our surveys around low tide so that we can observe the high tide line and we can also observe the spring tide line. So we take a measurement of how full this culverts are normally. The fuller they are, usually the more of a barrier that they are. So you can see this one is more than halfway full a lot of the time, even at low tide. So if we were to remediate this barrier, so install something larger or, you know, ideally a bridge, it usually is the you know, ecologically the best as far as, you know, flood abatement goes. Not always financially feasible, but you could open up 22 miles of upstream network and then 27,000 miles, you know, that's including all of the little tidal tributaries and everything that this ultimately flows into before reaching the Atlantic. So here's another one in Savannah, Grove Point Road on Rockfish Creek. So this is the headwaters, the beginning of a tidal creek or estuary, but its downstream network is 666 miles. So, and you can see some of the things that measurements that we do in person, and sometimes you can see it from Google Earth, is looking at the scour pool. So the larger the area is that's unvegetated in the scour, that is just reflective of the pressure that the water is under when it's moving through the barrier. An exciting development is that we've identified Tybee 6th Street as one of the priorities of the coast that needs to be remediated, and the city of Tybee has actually received grant funding to do that restoration. So we're really excited to work with them, and as we've, you know, conducted the measurement already, but to look at how things change in that wetland and how things work better for their community after they've done this restoration. And I believe that's all the slides that I have. So thank you.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Any questions for Janie? Wakota has one.
I have two questions. One is, do you have a website where we can click on one of the locations and find out what the conditions are?
So yes, there is a website. And I can provide that link to you. It's not updated in real time, so sometimes there may be a lag in the data, but you can always reach out to me directly and ask. And the website doesn't have all of the physical measurements. It's kind of more the public facing, you know, you can see the pictures of it. You can see some rankings, but if you want all of the nitty gritty data, feel free to reach out to me and I can make sure you have for your specific sites.
Okay. My second question, I think each jurisdiction have like stormwater management team, right? Yeah. So how can this data be integrated with the stormwater management data?
You tell me how we can use it. I would love to provide it. Yeah, anything. The goal of this is to share this information with communities and work with them to see, to identify, you know, choke points and areas where we can, you know, assist in moving that stormwater back into the wetlands.
Okay. Thank you. I think Deanna, I think we might like need to go back and talk to like Michelle, go back, talk to the stormwater management, Richmond Hill, Rincon. So all of us, Effingham County, Port Wentworth, talk to the stormwater management team to see probably how you can better utilize this data.
Definitely. Thank you guys. Up next, we're moving into our informational reports. I think Katie had to leave for the GDOT status report. So that one is available for review. And we'll move on to Chatham County. The information is as presented for the Girard Avenue Improvement Project. We did get right-of-way authorization for that one. So that one should be moving forward. Right-of-way off is pending for Chevis and I-16 at Jimmy Deloach Parkway. The Quaco Road project, widening project, went out for bid, and we're hoping to award that one next month. US 80 sidewalks is still under construction, and John Carter at Little Neck Road signal install should be under construction soon. Any questions on Chatham County projects? All right. Up next, we've got City of Savannah.
And I will hit the highest of the high points. The city and Kimberly Horn had a public information open house week before last and to present concept designs for operational improvements for Duren at Montgomery and Duren at White Bluff. And that is moving forward. And we're also, of course, working with GDOT and Federal Highway. The preliminary plans are scheduled to be out in the next couple of months. DeLesseps is projected for completion in November. It's been a long road, but it is scheduled. We're looking for November. Ideally, the contractor said before Thanksgiving. He wants to be out of the road and didn't want to have to think about it over Thanksgiving. The Truman Linear Trail is still on schedule for completion a year from now, June of 2026. They're pouring concrete. If you are going northbound on the Truman Parkway between Duren and DeLesseps, you can see where they've got forms down and pouring concrete for the Truman Linear Trail. Middle Ground Road is still in its very initial phases, working with, doing the coordination letters with GDOT, survey, archaeology, and ecology. We went back to the consultant and really wanted them to put together a comprehensive access management plan so that the Tied to Town trail along Middle Ground and Montgomery Cross will be as safe as possible. And the I-16 ramp removal, City Council approved execution of the contract with GDOT to complete the IMR, and so that is moving forward.
Any questions for City of Savannah? Up next, we've got Chatham Area Transit.
Okay, the report is provided to you, and I can let you guys peruse that at your leisure here and for the sake of time, but I would like to announce that next week on June 25th, we're going to be beginning our chat series, Your Ride, Your Voice, and this is both an informational series and then an opportunity to hear back from the community, and some of our Chatham County friends will be receiving formal invitations and are welcome to attend those meetings. So, and if you have any questions about any projects, I'm here to answer those.
Thank you, Mary. Up next, Savannah Hilton Head International Airport.
Yeah, we have 8 projects under active construction. Our security checkpoint expansion is complete. We're working on punch list items, and we'll be finishing that up shortly. Our fuel storage facility, we added some items to the scope pretty late into construction. Some of the equipment that we added has some long lead times. So we're about 98% complete on construction, but we have to wait on some items, so it's pushed about August. Our auxiliary parking is complete. We'll be closing that out soon. Our air cargo facility, if you've been on Gulfstream Road, next to the airport, you'll notice that both buildings 1 and 2 are up. They're working on the braced framing for the roof for building 1, parking and site access. The terminal concourse expansion, we're working on finishing the foundation preparation for the concourse itself. Taxiway G and bridge, where if you've been on Gulfstream Road, you'll notice the bridge across Gulfstream Road is now up. We're setting box beams, installing PT rods, and grouting the keyways for the bridge. We'll be starting the concrete for the taxiway probably in the next couple of weeks. The demo Quail Run Lodge is complete. We're sodding and seeding the site this week. We should have that project closed out by the end of the month. And the demo air cargo phase 1B, we awarded the bid a few weeks ago. We're getting the contractor under contract, and the City of Savannah is reviewing the plans for permitting.
Yep. All right. Thank you so much, Heath. City of Port Wentworth project status updates.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me here. Omar was busy today. It's a pleasure to be here, and I wanted to say that I'm very excited to hear that we will have this project reporting tool, because there's so much going on in Port Wentworth that it's hard to figure out how to give you the full scope. So that is terrific. My two most pertinent things to this group, I guess, from the report are, first, we have a GDOT approved signalized intersection going in Highway 21 and Lakeside Boulevard, which is at the north end of the city. They have actually started, as of this week, clearing for the spine road that is going to go up against southbound 21. I believe they anticipate being mostly done somewhere around October, November. We've also begun a Cooper Carey-led overlay project, which is going to help us take a lot of recent studies we've done with regards to infrastructure, transportation, streetscaping, all that, and apply it in a more meaningful and actionable way. Those will focus on Highway 30, Highway 21, and our downtown by Highway 25.
Thank you so much. And then any updates from GPA? City of Bloomingdale? Garden City? Pooler? Town of Thunderbolt? City of Tybee? Effingham County.
I'll be quick and brief. So we did get the bike pedestrian plan adopted by the county, which we're excited about. We shared that with the core MPO. And then I had opportunity to present the transportation master plan that we're working with Pond to the board of commissioners in a workshop. We think we're going to do one more workshop, and then we'll put that up for adoption. So county's excited about getting that officially adopted. And then we've got a ton of projects going on, but I'll bring a spreadsheet next time and walk us through it. So thank you.
Thank you. Any of your municipalities here? Okay. And who are you with? I'm sorry. Rinkin. Okay. Thanks. Bryan County. All right. City of Richmond Hill. Thanks. And then Lats, SCDOT. All right, I guess that report is there for us to review. Any notices for us?
We do have the USDOT memo from April 24th of this year, and it's to recipients of all USDOT funding. So if you didn't receive this letter, I would recommend reading it, essentially just emphasizing what your funding is contingent on. And if you have questions, please let us know.
All right. Thank you so much. With that being said, our meeting is adjourned. We'll see you all August 21st. Thanks.